Welcome to the Radio 191 FM podcast.
You're tuned into R1 News at 1. Every weekday from 1 till 2 p.m, our dedicated news team brings you the hard-hitting stories, interviews and culture pieces from across Otepoti, Dunedin.
That's right, you're listening to the R1 News. It is Tuesday the 13th of August, which means your hosts for today are myself, Jemima Lorimer and Isla Taring. We'll be back with the bulletin very, very soon. And we've also got Sports Sweep with Sam Somerville to fill you in on all the news from the Olympics, how did New Zealand do, what records were broken, as well as some football news a wee bit closer to home. And we also have Isla's STEM segment where she'll be taking us through nasal vaccines, which is super interesting. First up for you, though, this is Sweat by Ray featuring Tane.
Here are the R1 News at 1 headlines.
This is the R1 News for Tuesday, the 13th of August. I'm Isla.
I'm Jemima. In national news, Louise Upston, Social Development and Employment Minister, has presented a new traffic light system for beneficiaries. Phase 1 launches on the 12th of August, with Phase 2 being introduced in 2025. As of now, there are no details on Phase 2. To contextualise the implementation, the government has set a target of 50,000 fewer people on the Job Seeker Support Benefit by 2030. Green means you're on track as long as you continue meeting your obligations. Orange means you haven't met your obligations, therefore you need to contact your provider and indicate reasons for not meeting your obligations. Red means your payments have reduced or stopped and you need to contact your provider immediately. The website located on workandincome.gov.nz covers further details on who the traffic light system is for in terms of the benefits covered. In addition, the beneficiary period has increased from a year to 2 years and requires job seeker support recipients to reapply to receive their benefit every 6 months. Social Development and Employment Minister Louise Upston claims that this allows the Ministry of Social Development to check in on job seekers more often and provide a greater level of support to overcome their barrier to work while they are still eligible for the benefit. The most contested change was the inclusion of a payment card, of which half of the benefit will go towards, that can only be used for a limited range of essential products and services.
Immigration Minister Erica Stanford has also rolled out increased visa fees. While some costs went down slightly or stayed the same, the majority saw an increase. During national election campaigns, they promised to make Immigration New Zealand a fully self-funded system. However, the increase in fees is far more than what is needed in order to make Immigration New Zealand costs. The Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment Department, in the recently published Immigration Fee and Levy Review, discussed options to reduce Crown expenditure for immigration services and English speakers in other countries, while claiming that losses can be gained through increased fees from immigration system users. In the executive summary of the review, the committee outlines an objective being to remain competitive with Australia's charges. Green Party's immigration spokesperson Ricardo Menendez-March points out that the increased costs put pressure on migrant workers who are being used as cash cows to pay for taxes. Minister Stanford claims that approximately $140 million would also go towards visa processing, assessing, managing high-risk applications, asylum claims, upgrading ICT systems in Immigration New Zealand, and increased compliance costs. Russell Palmer, digital political journalist for RNZ, points out that the deficit that Immigration New Zealand faced in May was less than a quarter of the roughly $140 million the new fees would bring in. Further analysis also shows that Immigration New Zealand was predicted to bring in more revenue than what was lost considering previous years.
In international news, on Saturday, Israeli forces killed more than 100 Palestinians sheltering in Al Tabin School in Gaza. Dozens are injured and the death toll is expected to rise. The school was sheltering people displaced by the ongoing war. Speaking to Al Jazeera, Ismail Al-Thawabta, the head of Gaza's government media office, said three Israeli bombs, weighing 907 kilograms each, were dropped while people had gathered for morning prayers, triggering a fire that ripped through the building. Gaza's civil defense agency described the attack as a horrific massacre. Palestinian journalist Hossam Shabat reported that rescue teams were unable to help those trapped by the flames as the Israeli military cut water access to the area. Al-Thawabta also said Israel was aware the school was acting as a shelter for displaced people. Israel's military said its air forces had struck a command and control center that served as a hideout for Hamas commanders. They also said their intelligence indicated there were 20 Hamas and Islamic Jihad fighters operating from the school, but provided no evidence, and said civilian casualty figures given by Palestinian authorities were inaccurate. Hamas throughout the war has continuously denied Israeli accusations that it operates from civilian facilities, such as school and hospitals. This is the fifth school to be targeted by Israeli airstrikes since the beginning of August. Each attack has left at least a dozen dead, with dozens of people injured. This is one of the deadliest strikes since October 7.
President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. from the Philippines has condemned Chinese air forces for dropping flares in the routine patrol path of a Philippine aircraft, calling it reckless and unjustified. His claims came after the South Theater Command of the Chinese People's Liberation Army found Philippine air forces in the Scarborough Shoal or the Hongguan Island to China, which claimed disrupted training activities. However, there are conflicting statements from security officials stating that Chinese jets flew at a very close distance to the Philippine Air Forces, with another security official claiming that there were 8 flares launched. This follows conflict over the South China Sea. Country capitals Manila and Beijing have accused each other of disrupting military operations around the Scarborough Shoal, the largest coral ring in the South China Sea. The shoal is located in the exclusive economic zone of the Philippines, which in turn is part of the West Philippine Sea. To clarify, the West Philippine Sea is located within the South China Sea but does not encompass the entire area. The zone was first established in 1978 under the presidential decree. However, the same territory has been owned by China as its ancestral territory since the 13th century.
In Otipoti News, the University of Otago's Faculty of Dentistry has created and implemented a new postgraduate adult restorative dental care certificate. The certificate enables registered and practicing dental therapists and oral health therapists to provide restorative care to patients aged 18 years and older. Currently, dental therapists only provide routine oral health care to children and adolescents, but are not allowed to provide care to adults. Through the establishment of this new certificate, New Zealand improves access to dental treatments and eases the overburdened healthcare system.
This has been the R1 News Bulletin for Tuesday, the 13th of August. Today's bulletin was written by Isla Taring and Jemima Lorimer and read to you by Isla Taring and Jemima Lorimer.
You're listening to the R1 News at 1, and that was Disaster Radio with No Pulse. Make sure you stay tuned because we'll be back very, very soon with Sam Somerville's Sports Sweep and Isla's STEM News. But next up for you, this is Elliot Dawson with Bald Spot.
This is R1 News. I'm Isla.
And I'm Jemima, and we're hosting your sports sweep for the 13th of August.
In Olympic news, the event officially ended yesterday morning with New Zealand coming 11th with an impressive display of medal tally of 10 gold, 7 silvers, and 3 bronze, a total of 20 medals. Paris 2024 marks our best ever performance at the Olympic Games, scoring more gold medals than any other games we've competed in. Our previous records was set in Los Angeles 1984 Games with a total of 8 gold medals. The United States won the Games with a total of 128 medals, 40 of them being gold, with China in second and Japan coming in third. Over the last week, the Kiwis collected 13 of their gold medals, 13 of their 20 medals, 5 of these coming from track cycling, with Elise Andrews winning double golds in the Kirin and sprint formats, Williston winning bronze in Omnium, and the women's pursuit and sprint teams both earning silver. Lisa Carrington managed to win triple golds in the 500 canoe sprints, leading the women's K1, K2, and K4 all to victory. Finn Butcher also won gold in the canoe slalom, with Lydia Ko winning another gold in golf. Wilkinson and Dawson took bronze in the mixed multi-hull sailing, and to top it all off, we won 2 gold medals in athletics. A silver came from an impressive display by Maddie Wish in shot put, and a first-ever high jump medal for New Zealand came in the form of gold for Hamish Kerr. An absolutely incredible campaign to watch from each and every one of our athletes, and one that will not be forgotten anytime soon by New Zealand.
Paris 2024 certainly did not disappoint in terms of record-breaking status, with 17 world records being broken. One of the most impressive over the games was Sweden's Armand Duplantis, breaking his own pole vault world record with a height of 6.25 metres. This is the 9th time Duplantis has managed to break the world record. Arshad Nadim won Pakistan's first Olympic medal in 32 years with an astounding javelin throw of 92.97 metres, breaking the previous Olympic record of 90.57 metres set in 2008. Botswana also won their first ever Olympic medal in the men's 200-metre sprint with a time of 19.46 seconds from athlete Letsile Tebogo.
In football news, Kiwi goalkeeper Alex Paulsen has made a shock move to new A-League side Auckland FC. The former Wellington Phoenix player has his breakout season last year, starting consistently for the first time and being named the A-League's goalkeeper of the season. The 22-year-old signed for an English Premier League side AFC Bournemouth after an impressive campaign, and now he's loaned to Auckland as both clubs share an owner. The Wellington Phoenix were quick to respond to the announcement, stating that they'll be seeking further information regarding Alex Paulsen's loan move. This is due to a recently removed rule from the A-League stating that players cannot move between clubs under the same owner before 2 years have passed. Coincidentally, an hour after it was announced that this rule would be abolished, Auckland FC announced the signing of Alex Paulsen. This drama will cause a spicy first derby between Auckland and Wellington set to take place at Sky Stadium on the 2nd of November. I'm Isla.
And I'm Jemima.
And that was your sports sweep for the 13th of August, written by Sam Somerville, Radio 1.
We'll be back in a moment with Isla's STEM news, but right now this is Astarangu with Skip on Track 1. Welcome back to the R1 News at 1. That was Baby Zionov with Sudoku Class featuring Chansey. And next up for you, we've got STEM News with Isla Taring.
Hey, so as we all know, widespread vaccine administration is very difficult. There are many barriers to prevent public access, one of them being administration. Intranasal vaccine delivery is an alternative form where particles are inhaled into the nasal cavity. Think of it as any typical nasal spray. Typically, vaccines are given through perinatal preparations. These are when medications are placed into the body through injection. Intranasal vaccines are beneficial as they allow for a reduced risk of infection, enhanced safety, efficacy, and ease of administration. Iwasaki, professor of immunology, molecular, cellular, and developmental biology at Yale University, during the COVID-19 pandemic suggested a prime and spike strategy, where the injection would be used first with boosters or touch-ups being distributed through nasal delivery. One limitation of aerosol-administrated vaccines is the necessity of electricity. This is because electricity is needed to power a nebulizer, which is the device that converts liquid medication into a fine mist that can be inhaled. One study in 2016 found that through the use of a tire pump, a car battery, and a nebulizer, they were able to produce an aerosol for max vaccinations during a Mexican pandemic during 1990 to 1991. Using this equipment, thousands of children were able to become vaccinated. Within New Zealand, aerosol vaccines are not used. However, there are 2 distinct studies currently happening in the University of Otago, the only 2 in the country, that investigate measles immunity in vaccinated young adults. To quote the summary of the study, the working hypothesis is that aerosoled MMR vaccine will stimulate exposure to wild measles virus, and our data will allow calculation of accurate thresholds of measles antibody required pre-exposure to protect against measles infection on exposure. The other study being conducted measures the local and systematic adverse reactions for aerosol device administration, intradermal device administration, and typical intramuscular administration.
And that was STEM News with Isla Tarring for this week. That's super interesting, getting a vaccine just via your nose. It would make it so much easier. Hopefully we'll see it happen. To keep on with that vaccine-related chat, this is The Vaccines with Handsome on Radio 1 News. We'll be back soon with the weather. Oh God, 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 they're gonna eat me up for breakfast. You think you look good and whatever they sugarcoat you. The R1 News at 1 with a forecast.
This is Isla from R1 News. Today's weather is an average around 13. It's partly cloudy, and the weather isn't all too bad today compared to the dreadful rain yesterday. So we're doing pretty good in that regard. For the rest of the week, there's going to be some rain on Friday, but it seems like it's mostly clouds.
The R1 News at 1 with a forecast.
And that wraps up the R1 News for today. The date is Tuesday, the 13th of August, and your hosts have been myself, Jemima Lorimer.
And Isla.
Thank you so much for tuning in today. If you missed part of the show, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Just look for the R1 News. And you can catch up on all of the other news. We'll be back tomorrow at 1 p.m. for your Wednesday show. Keep it locked. The next song you have coming up is Kathy Bates Motel with Where Do You Go on the One.
You've been listening to R1 News at One here on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. The R1 News is uploaded daily wherever you get your podcasts, or head to r1.co.nz/news to get yourself all caught up. Additionally, you can follow R1 News NZ to keep up to date with all our newsworthy happenings.
This was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. All of our content lives online at r1.co.nz.